let's shift a little bit and let's talk about you. And she did it in a way where I didn't feel, or like my ego wasn't, you know, like, what do you mean? It's all him, you know, not me. And I like to say that on this day, so May 31st, 2016, I met myself for the first time.
For tuning in to the Jackie Minsky Show. I am so excited for today's episode. My good friend Sally Colon came on and we got a chance to have girl talk and talk about some really, really important things about life and about being single moms and dating and just how to cope through even the holiday season right now. And if you're listening and you're by yourself, the one powerful takeaway from this episode is your power in being alone. You know, during the holidays, especially if you're alone, don't feel alone. Use those moments to empower yourself. Use that extra time to meditate, to pray, to journal, to visualize the kind of person you want in your life, the kind of life you want, the kind of career you want. Really hone into your vision, right? Because when your vision comes to life, you're gonna wish you had more free time, right? So in the meantime, use it as the process to prepare for your vision. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. If you didn't have a chance to leave the Jackie Minsky Show a rating and a review, please do so. Thank you guys so much. I love you. Mwah. I'm super excited to have my dear friend, someone who I've gotten to know over the past few months, thanks to an app called Clubhouse, Sally Colon. She is a filmmaker, a Jay Shetty certified life coach, a mom, entrepreneur, and so many things. Sally, thank you so much for doing this with me. How are you?
I'm so good. I was just saying earlier, I was rushing through traffic to get to back to my house to do this. And I'm so excited to be with you. I'm so glad to see you in person, you know, because I feel like we only do phone calls and listen to each other on the app. So it's nice.
Yeah. And it's interesting how the app Clubhouse has brought so many people together. You know, something when I was downloading Clubhouse, I don't know if you noticed it, but as it's downloading, it says the stars are aligning. Like that's literally what Clubhouse, you never saw that?
What? Yeah. No.
As you download Clubhouse, it says the stars are aligning.
Oh, I like that.
So it's interesting because so many people have built these relationships that it would have taken us years to meet each other. You know, some of us are cities miles apart and yet here we are, all connecting and meeting. So interesting, that's how we met.
Yes, it is. And I don't even know if we would have ever met without Clubhouse because you're East Coast, I'm West Coast. So we're miles apart.
Yeah, yeah. So let's start with, we'll go to Clubhouse and then we'll dive into the journey. So tell me, what brought you on Clubhouse?
My sister, actually. my sister, who's also a documentarian, she lives on the East Coast. She's in Charlotte. She was a newscaster. And so she's always in the know of the latest and greatest things. And I try to be in the know, but she's always right before me. So she said, sis, there's this app, it's called Clubhouse. I'm on it. Like, can I interview you? And I thought, yeah, let's do it. So I got on under her and she, you know, had me in the room and I didn't know how to use the mic. I mean, it's typical. Nobody ever knew how to use a mic. How do I do this? How do I get on stage? So it was like an empowering women type room. And it was great. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. And then for like a month, I didn't do anything because it was still kind of confusing to me. And then January came. So I got on in December. January came and I thought, you know, what is my specialty going to be? And I decided it's just going to be entertainment. Even though I'm a life coach, but just entertainment, I stayed to that. And I've been doing one room every Sunday for 11 months called the Hollywood Insiders. And my sister is not even on the app. I think she has like 900 followers now. She just stopped using it for some reason. And I thank her every day for letting me know about it because it's been one of my most fun things that I've done. And like you said, I've met so many incredible people. So I love the app. It's a good app.
And you know, what I really love about the app also is it made us all think, how can we step more into the skills we already have, right? You know, yes. We all came onto the app with skills, you know, hopefully. I mean, we did weed through some people that didn't have any skills.
Yes, we did, girl. Like, over here, get over there.
We had to weed through some pretenders, but for me personally, as well as, you know, it sounds like for you, when I joined the app, I did the same thing. I said, what skill set and how am I going to position myself here professionally in order to make the right connections? So I love that. So let's start there. How did you get your start with, you know, the film industry? Like, take me through the beginning. Like, what made you choose that industry?
Okay. So when I was a kid, you know, I was obsessed. You know, I got my first camera when I was like 10 years old. I knew that filmmaking was my thing. I was obsessed with television, how it's made, who are these people? How do I get to them? Like, I knew that one day I was going to move to Hollywood. I'm from Chicago, born and raised, went to high school in Chicago, grammar school, the whole thing. And then I went to I decided to go to college. I went through junior college first, and then I went to Columbia College in Chicago to take some film classes. And then I took the journey to a university in Oklahoma. I went to Oral Roberts University. My dad was a pastor, so I ended up at a Christian university. And that's where I took all of my, you know, production. Back then, though, it's kind of funny because they had the cameras that were on wheels, you know, a long time ago. I'm telling my age now. And I knew that directing was my thing. I just knew that, number one, I was really bossy as a kid. And number two, I just loved the vision of seeing it on screen. So as I was going through my classes, I remember talking to my counselor saying, who's the one that makes the look on the TV and the film? Who's that person? They're like, director. I go, that's what I want to be. Wow. So I went into this, kind of a funny story. I went into a junior senior directing class and I was a freshman. And at the end of the class, Dr. Lewandowski, that was my teacher, he said, you know, this is a junior senior class, right? And you're a freshman. And normally we don't have freshmen. And I said, please, Dr. Lewandowski, like, please let me, like, I promise you, like, I will do really good in this. So he let me stay. Aww. So I was the only freshman. And my very first play, because I started in theater, was Brighton Beach Memoir. And I got to cast it. You know, the class, and for that semester, you had to cast the play. You had to, you know, get everybody with the scenes and the props and you had to do it all. Right. So anyway, that was my first experience. And I knew I got the bug so deeply. I said, this is it. This is where I'm going. So I finished school. Then I got into politics for a little while. I worked for a politician in Arizona. And then I worked my way back to Chicago, saved some money, and decided I'm headed to Hollywood. And I actually, my senior year, you know how you had the little caption on the bottom of your name? Yeah. Mine was Hollywood, here I come. And I knew I was always destined for Hollywood. So I saved some money. I moved to Hollywood. I had about $1,000 in my bank account, got a job at a waiting tables at Chin Chin's on Sunset. And I had a roommate already established, and got an agent within 6 months. I was also acting at the time. So I booked my very first movie, Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag, with Joe Pesci and David Spade and Christy Swanson, George Hamilton, Diane Cannon. So that was my very first movie, which I still get money for it. So it's showing somewhere. This was like 25 years ago. Yeah. I played the Spanish maid, and I shot for 2 weeks with Joe, and it was the greatest experience. And then, so I mostly started in acting first. I wanted to kind of learn everything. And then I hosted TV. And then I ended up signing a $1.3 million record deal with a Latin girl group, got recruited by Suzanne DePass, who discovered Jackson 5. And that was like for 2 or 3 years, I did that because I also sing. And then, I went from acting to singing to then producing. And then my very first directing debut was with a documentary that I created about women, empowering women that are changing the world in the areas of sex trafficking, FGM. I shot it in Africa. And that was it. I mean, there's so much more. Obviously, I'm giving you like the wide view. But now I'm mainly directing and developing shows, reality shows, docuseries, documentaries, and my latest is Women Like Us. So you could see the trailer on my Instagram. And that tells you, like, Moby did all the music for it. I co-produced it with Kat Sadler, who used to be on E! News. And I had the former First Lady of Kenya was in it. Sherry Shepherd from The View was in it. So I had some celebrities, and that's why we did the festival circuit, that it did really well. Gina Davis brought us in for 2 sold out screenings. So it's been good. And right now it's being, it's with a sales agent being sold across the country. So that's my baby. That's my third child. Women like us.
I love that. And you know, I love that you know, before you dived into producing or directing, you wanted to know the industry as mm-hmm. an actress, right? Similar mm-hmm. to what I did before I even became a publicist. You know, I went through the steps of branding my own podcast and the branding and the marketing for myself. And then how do I, you know, turn the camera, quote unquote, to how do I serve now that I've been in that position, right? And I think that's what really makes someone great at their skill set when they've gone through it firsthand, mm-hmm. right? So I love that you said that, because as we're saying that, I was like, yes, I'm like, that's, you know, that's how I got my start. So take me through what it felt like to be, you know, a young girl moving to a place and by yourself, right?
By myself.
So what did that feel like? Because, you know, I always discuss fear, right? And that's the thing that stops a lot of people. So did you feel the fear? How did you move through it in a new place by yourself at a young age?
So there's so much to that, right? There's layers and layers and layers, because it wasn't just fear. It was low self-esteem, not feeling worthy. I was bullied as a kid. We lived in a neighborhood where we were the only Hispanic family. I'm Puerto Rican. My family's from Puerto Rico. And they burned our garage down 3 times. I got bullied every day. The kids in my neighborhood were not allowed to hang with the brown girls, my sister and I. And so we weren't invited to our block party. So my bedroom window was right, you know, I could see the block party happening, but our family was not invited. So I grew up with a lot of discrimination, which messed me up. So moving to Hollywood was very brave of me, but I am a planner. So let me just say this. Before I moved, I went to California for about a week and got to know some people. And one of my friends set me up with a roommate. So I had the roommate, I had the place to live before I moved there. So I planned it all first and then I moved. But fear was the last thing in my mind at that time, but I didn't realize that. So fear was at the forefront, but it was all because of low self-esteem, you know, feeling unworthy, all of that, and thinking there's no way I'm gonna make it because I'm not good enough. So that's really was my struggle, was not thinking I was good enough to be there, but I still did it. So that's where the resilience, which Puerto Ricans are known for their resilience. That's why when Hurricane Maria came, we got through it. You know what I mean? Like it took over our entire island, but we got through it. So that's one thing character-wise that we're known for, like just push through it no matter what you come from. So yeah, I was a little bit fearful, but it was more just trying to deal with who the heck is going to book me? Like what agent am I going to get? Like, I'm not good enough for this, you know? So that's what I had to work through more than fear.
I love that so much, because that's the thing. Sometimes people feel the fear, but they don't open the curtain and say, okay, where's the fear stem from? So that was a super powerful, powerful point. And I know now, you know, you're a single mom just like myself, but take me through, you know, when you first got married, when you first became a mom, how did that affect you as someone who was a director, as someone who was in the industry? Did you have to take time away from, you know, the business, or did you work while you were, you know, stepping into the new role of wife and mom?
So when I was about to get married, first of all, I married my best friend, but it wasn't someone I was in love with. So it wasn't a romantic. Oh, you too.
Me too.
Ooh, girl, we're going to have to talk about that. Mine was more just trying to find someone who loved me, filled the hole of not being loved as a kid. So that's what I was looking for. So I married some of their parents were still together. Southern boy, loved me with all his heart. That was good enough for me. So the in love part, I wasn't even worried about that at that time. So when I married him, I was signed to DreamWorks. I signed a Latin girl group. We signed a $1.3 million record deal. He was also a musician. So he had signed a $1.2 million with Geffen. So we were both kind of on the same path. He was a musician. I was a musician. So when he was recording in the studio, I understood I was recording with my band. So that's where we were. So we're kind of on the same path, which made it easier. So it was comfortable. But the marriage was never romantic. But it was difficult. I felt a little bit like I made this big mistake. I actually canceled the wedding the week before, and then he convinced me to marry him. So it wasn't a good situation. We were married 15 years. I stayed for the kids, which is good and bad. So we got divorced. And then this is the best part for my life. I dove into therapy because I needed to know, number one, why did I marry someone I wasn't in love with? That was something. There's something there. Number two, what was my part in why it didn't work out, right? So a lot of it, I focused completely the first few months of therapy completely on it's his fault. It was him. He was a narcissist. He didn't love me the way I needed to be loved. I mean, it was all, you know, blame, 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 blame. And then one day my therapist said, let's shift the conversation. She's brilliant. I mean, I still see her. It's been 3.5 years. Let's shift a little bit and let's talk about you. And she did it in a way where I didn't feel or like my ego wasn't, you know, like, what do you mean? It's all him, you know, not me. And I like to say that on this day, I have it tattooed. It's on May 31st, 2016. I met myself for the first time.
Wow.
I found out who I was, who I am. And I met this girl that I did not like, but I knew that I couldn't get rid of her, right? You can't get rid of yourself. You got to live with yourself for the rest of your life. So if you don't like yourself, that's a really tough thing to live with. So I completely transformed 3.5 years. I read every book you can imagine. I went to spiritual care boundaries classes. I dove in deep, deep, deep. And, today I can say that I know myself very well. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I like me, you know, it's weird to say, but I like me. And because I like me, I'm able to like others in a very confident, I don't hang out with people that I know it doesn't feel right to me. I don't date because I just want to date, you know? So it's a lot of thought. It's a lot. I use my brain a lot now.
Yeah.
To make decisions.
I love that. But, so first I want to dive into something that any, if there's, you know, a girl listening, young girl or someone going through something similar, you know, I want to dive into the part of getting married for the sake of getting married because of society and pressure, right? Mm-hmm. I too married my best friend, someone I knew for 10 years. His mother was my piano teacher. And I kind of was at that point, you know, I have an older sister. My older sister got married when she was 20. And by 22, she had her first kid. And here I was 24, not married. And I didn't want my parents to be like, something wrong with her, right? Because our older one is married. So I too at 24 decided, you know what, I'm going to marry my best friend because like you said, he loves me. And also my grandfather had taught us, every girl in my family, this is like a rule. I don't know if I believe in it, but he used to always teach us, marry the man that loves you more. And I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Marry the guy who loves you more than you love him.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, you know, our grandfather always said that to us. Now I'm at a position where my best friend has been in love with me since I'm 18, tried to date me when we were younger. And I was like, no. And then I got married. But for anyone who's listening right now, you know, intuition is powerful, right? Like I knew going in, my intuition was like very uncomfortable. It's like, what are you doing? And, you know, it took me years to play catch up in my career. That's why I always ask, like, how was it when you were going into the marriage? Because with me, when I got married and then I became a mom, I had years of, I wasn't in my career. Right. So when that fell apart, I was starting from scratch. And I think as women, that's the hardest thing for us is we separate our work life with our wife, mom life, and then we lose ourselves in that day-to-day scene. So take me through the transition of maybe when you did get divorced, were you working while you were married and it was an easier transition, or you were working less and you had to find your power again?
So you're brilliant for asking that question. Because at the time when I decided to leave him, which some people say it's so much easier to leave than to stay, but that's not true for those that have left, right? It's harder, in my opinion, it's harder to leave. So I was in the process of finishing up my documentary. So for 3.5 years prior to that, I was just pouring money in to my project. So I wasn't working. I was working, but not making money. So he was making enough money that I didn't have to work. So my all of my money, my personal money, was going towards my documentary. So when I decided to leave, I was like, what am I going to do? Where am I going to live? I had a 5-bedroom, 3-bath home that we loved, big backyard with the, you know, trampoline, like what you imagine, right, for family. We were selling the house. So I had to figure out, how do I take my daughters from a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home to an apartment? Because that's what I was going to have to do. So we decided to sell the house. I took, plucked out some of my inheritance money, which he was kind enough to let me take my inheritance money back, and some equity that we made. And I knew that for that first year, I can live off of that a little bit while I figure out what the heck, where am I going? What am I doing? You know? And I wasn't sure where I was going to go. I was, let me say this, the very first Saturday that I didn't have my kids, right? Because we decided to split 50-50. I moved into a 3-bedroom, beautiful condo that I was renting in one of the nicest places in my area. So I wanted to make sure my girls didn't feel the hard impact, and me, to be honest. So moved into a great place. That was fine. The very first Saturday, because every Saturday when I was married, I got, every day actually, I got a beautiful cup of coffee in bed. And every Saturday, we would have pancakes, turkey, bacon, music, beautiful family, sit down, the whole thing. So the very first Saturday that I didn't have that, I woke up, my kids were gone, my dog was gone, they were with him. And I woke up and went, oh my gosh, where is everybody? Like what? And I was so depressed. I mean, it hit me so hard. Loneliness. I don't do well with loneliness. I love people. I want to be around people. I am not a, you know, be alone kind of person. People give me energy. And I went into depression probably for a while. You know, I don't know how long, but months and months and months. And I didn't know what I was going to do. But, you know, I'm also a pastor's kid. I pray a lot. And so I knew that I had the gift, the talent to be and do, you know, so I wasn't worried, but I did have to start from scratch. And my documentary, the great thing about it is I got it done and I was able to travel. I started traveling and making money on theaters that brought me in. People would fly me in to do, you know, Q&A. And that's where I was making some of my money. So it started with that. And then other projects started to come. And I, you know, I was just praying a lot. And so I got through it. But there was moments, I will say, there was a couple months where I needed help. My best friend, Cindy Diane, her and her husband, they helped me 1 month. My aunt helped me 1 month. And listen, I surround myself around beautiful people that if they're struggling, I help them. If I'm struggling, they help me. So I never felt alone. But that's important to have people that you trust, that your ego, you put it aside and say, you know what? I'm broke this month and I need a little help. And they were there for me. So I'm good now, you know, but it took a little while to get here.
I love that. I know. And I know you and I connected offline and we spoke about that. That's something people, especially single moms, we don't speak up enough about. But a few things I want to touch up on. The first one being, you said that when you first woke up that Saturday and you were alone, you were very lonely. And mm-hmm. I want to ask you the question, is it you were lonely at that moment because you were just getting to know yourself, like you just realized, you know, they say if you love yourself and you're alone, you're not lonely. So mm-hmm. was that kind of how you realized that you had work to do because you were, you know, and take me through now, if you're alone, you're probably not lonely, right? So was that the moment you realized that you have the work to do because you feel alone?
I didn't know that then. And I wasn't in therapy then. That was like right after my divorce. So I didn't know it then. As I was starting to go to therapy and starting to get to know myself, then the loneliness didn't feel as heavy, as strong. But I will say that I love people even now. Even now, I want to be around people. I want to play board games. I want to go walking with my friends. I do like quiet time for sure, but not too much of it. there's still a struggle in me that I think is an innate thing in me that I don't like to be alone. And I think some of that is because I was alone a lot as a kid. Mm. So I'm not there yet. Where you are talking right now, I'm not there yet. Even with all the therapy I've had, I still want to have people around me all the time.
I just had a wow moment because of you.
Tell me.
So I'm like a hermit crab. I love being by myself. I don't know why. Oh. But just now you pointed out to me, because when I was younger, my mom was always around people and she would take me to the parties and I was like, I just want to be alone.
Oh, I got chills.
I was just like, wow, the opposite happened for me because growing up, and you know, my mom, she had me when she was 36. And when she had me, she was kind of going through that phase because, you know, my sister and I have a 16-year difference. And she already raised my sister. And then 16 years later, she had me. So I think she was going through what some women go through, is when you're a mom and a wife for so many years, then you kind of rebel. So by the time I was growing up, my mother was very in her party phase. Like, I've been a wife, I've been a mom. And she would take me along to like all these like parties and meetups. And I was like, I just want to be home. Like, I was a kid. I was like, I just want to go home and watch TV. So when she just said that to now, it connected my dots. And I was like, that's why I love being alone, because I had the opposite. She drove me everywhere. And sometimes, it wasn't always the best situation. You know, if she drank somewhere and then my father had to come get us, you know. So I'm the opposite now because of that. So it's interesting that you said that. Yeah. But then I wanted to touch up on point number two. And I think this is how the universe, God source works. When we make the decision to do something, the way kind of starts to open up for us. So even when, you know, you decided to move out and divorce and part with your husband, do you feel like the minute you made that decision, the doors and the ways started to open up slowly?
You know, I think work-wise, no. But I think mind-wise, yes. So as a Christian growing up in the church, you know, my manual was the Bible, and that was it. Like, you couldn't steer me away from that. When I got divorced, somebody introduced me to the Four Agreements. That was my very first spiritual book. And it scared me a little bit at first, because I was like, wait a minute, like, this is a little woo-woo for me, you know? But then I started to see things happening in my brain, you know, I was in a box. I lived in a bubble or a box, whatever you want to call it. And all of a sudden it went, and I looked and I peeked and I went, What's that? You know, it's like, and I read Marianne Williamson's Tears to Triumph. I started reading Brené Brown. I started reading, you know, like all of these, Joe Dispenza freaked me out at first. And then I started to understand it a little bit more. And then it became about neuroscience for me, like learning about the brain and why, and traumas and all the stuff that happened to me and how was still affecting me, you know, because we could try to go, no, I forgave that guy for what he did to me when I was 10. I forgave that guy because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be a victim. Who wants to be known as a victim? Right. So when I started opening up to these things in my brain, that's when I started opening up in therapy. That's when this day happened, when I began to admit some of the things that happened to me and how that all of those things that happened to me were why I didn't like me, right? Because I didn't know how to deal with it. And I didn't know that I was still struggling. Or you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. And you know? I love the word that you just used, admit.
Admit.
A lot of people don't admit what they've been through, you know, because sometimes it's hard to open up that can of worms. So if you were to, you know, because there could be a new single mom listening to this, and you know, we're single moms and we'll jump into that more, but what would you tell someone who's just starting out as a single mom, and she may be scared and she may be at that place of loneliness? What is something you would tell her?
Take this time to meet yourself. And because I don't think people know, most people don't know who they are, right? They accept, but they don't really know. So I always say, please, I beg you, do not jump into a relationship right away. Because you know what you're doing. You're dragging your luggage full of all the stuff into another. Then you're unpacking it on another person. So take your luggage. Take this opportunity to clean out your luggage. Come to the next relationship with an empty baggage. Okay. And there's a way to do that. You're not just going to do that in one day. You're not going to say, okay, I'm coming in with an empty luggage. No, there's work. You got to work. Okay. So it, for you, it could take 1 year. For me, it took 3.5 years. And I remember my therapist saying to me, I don't want, you know, not I don't want, because she can't tell me what to do, but she suggested I don't date anyone for 2 years. And I was like, are you out of your mind? I'm not waiting 2 years. 3.5 years before I started dating again. And so I would say, don't take your baggage full of your stuff to the next relationship. Like, really take time to empty it out, because otherwise you're just taking the same thing over. So get to know yourself, meet yourself, take at least a year, I would say. But that's what I would, so important, so important. I mean, I could say this and you could think I'm crazy for saying it, but if you want a healthy relationship, you got to put the work in, period. There's no way around it. And you please know your part, know your role in it, because it takes two. No matter what happened to you, there's always a part that you play. So find out what that part is and, you know, unravel it, unpack it.
I love that. And I have this concept, you know, anytime I've been single, I always say, enjoy the time alone, because you don't have an extra pair of socks to pick up either. You know, like, make it a positive, right? Like, yes. Take the time to really, you know, and you know, I'm big on manifestation, Sally. So they say, if you sleep on the right side of the bed, you're making room for a guy in the left side of the bed. So I, you know, because I'm not ready for a relationship, I make sure to sleep in the middle of the bed. I'm not making room. I'm like,
I like that.
No, because the universe does test us, right? So
yeah.
And let's talk about society. You know, the dating culture now, you could swipe on an app and you have instant gratification. So, you know, the first thing someone does, especially, you know, the younger generation, is the minute they break up with someone, they go swipe to make the last person jealous. Mm. And I want you guys listening to understand, trying to hurt someone else or make someone else jealous is because something inside of you is so broken that you actually have to figure out, why am I trying to make this person jealous? What can I do that's productive to my time instead? Like you said, really get to know yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about how it was like being a single mom during the pandemic. Because we could dive into that. That was...
Lord help me.
How did you make the transition from the film industry to certified life coach?
It wasn't planned. It was something that an emergency, something that happened. So I'll tell you, 2 years ago, my dad committed suicide. I don't know if I've ever said that to you, but my father was a pastor growing up, right? That's why we grew up in the church. And about 2.5 years ago, my dad announced to my family that he was becoming an atheist, which blew us all, you know, just could not believe it. Like, why, like, what happened? He told me first, and I loved him through it. My dad and I were best friends. He was my person. He was the best guy I've ever met in my life. Genius, brain, the whole thing. And 8 months after he announced to me first that he was atheist, he committed suicide. And I looked at that as he lost his purpose. You know, he just didn't have anything to live for. There's so many things. I mean, I could define it in so many different ways. You know, maybe he became atheist because he knew he was going to do this so he wouldn't die guilty. I mean, there's so many things how I can unpack it. So seeing that and suffering from that, obviously, was the worst thing I've ever been through. My mom passed away and that was hard, but my dad passing away just hit me differently. So I decided to go back to school to become a life coach to help people that are dealing with mental illness because of my dad. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to go to Jay Shetty because I had been seeing him a lot on Instagram and I watching him and really resonated with him. I love the fact that he stopped his whole life to become a monk because it wasn't working. You know, his parents wanted him to be a doctor, lawyer, whatever. He decided to be a monk. And I just loved his story. I resonated with it. So I went back to school for a year, paid my big fee, you know, like invested in myself, put it on my credit card, paid it later. And I loved it. I love what I learned. It was a lot of work. And at the end of it, you got to meet in front of the board and you got to present. And it's, that was nerve wracking for me. I didn't pass the first time, which hurt me, my heart so bad. But then I went back before the board and I passed it and got my certification in the mail. And so now I have it. And, but I have five projects that I'm doing right now on the entertainment side. So my friend Tim Story and I are partnering to start a new project for life coaching. So I'm actually going to study under him now, and I'm going to be working alongside of him to help more people. So we're partnering to do this. I'm really excited about it. I think we're launching in December. And so, yeah. And then I have five entertainment projects that I'm working on. So that, and then life coaching.
I love that so much. I love Tim's story. I've heard him on Clubhouse a few times, thanks to you. Yeah. But what are, you know, maybe you know this, what are some signs that, you know, people close to us are depressed or, you know, cause sometimes depression isn't something that someone talks about. Right. So are there any signs that you would say, for people to look out for and the people in their lives?
That's a good question. It's hard for me to answer that because I have such an incredible relationship with my family and friends, in that I've always been super open about stuff. So my family and friends trust me. Mm. So I tend to be that person that people come to when they're feeling depressed, because they know that I'm going to guide them with love and compassion. Mm. So that's a hard thing for me to answer. Like even my daughter's friends, they'll come to my house and tell me, my parents don't know this, but I'm depressed and I've thought about suicide. Wow. They come to my house and tell me that, because I'm open and I'm non-judgmental, obviously. You know, I've struggled myself with things like that.
Do they ever tell you why? Because I'm curious to know what the younger generation, why is it the pressure? Do they ever tell you why? Because I'm curious to know why the younger generation is so depressed these days.
Yeah. Biggest thing is trying to keep up. Mm. The biggest thing. Reality TV, social media to me, if I was that person that was putting together a census, you know, it would be social media is the number one thing that has taken our youth down. Right. Also, there's so many shows on television right now that are geared towards youth, that are saying, you know, drugs, this. It's, For me as a filmmaker, I'm very frustrated by some of the things that are being presented to youth or pointed towards the youth. It's like they're trying to take our youth down. It's very, very weird for me. So low self-esteem, low self-worth, social media, trying to keeping up with the Kardashians, you know, all of it, reality TV. It's just boom, 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 you know? So my kids are off of Snapchat. They have an hour a day on any kind of social media. We have a thing called screen time that, if parents don't know about it, everyone has it on their iPhone. You can actually monitor your kids and how much time they spend on social media, on their phones, all of it. So if we're not awake, the parents are not awake, right? Okay. Then we're in trouble. We're in trouble if the parents are not awake.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because screen time, yes, but I don't let my son on YouTube, because you can't put a screen time on YouTube, unfortunately. Yeah. That's the one thing that you can't see what they're watching. So I don't let YouTube. True. But, you know, I heard someone say this earlier. There are scientists at work trying to keep us distracted. That's their job.
Agreed.
Their job is to distract us with social media, with the celebrities, you know? So it's definitely hard. So if you're someone who's, you know, listening and you're younger, you have to understand you're up against something that wants you to feel bad. So then you purchase and consume the things that they're selling.
Consuming, that's another big one. I'm glad you mentioned that.
So, and you know, it's something you said earlier, you invested into yourself by, you know, purchasing that program and coaching, you know, with Jay Shetty. So if you're someone listening, the question you should be asking yourself is, what am I investing into? Am I investing into the social media and the reality TV? Because then that's what I'm going to get. I'm going to get that negative feeling, right? Or am I investing into myself? What are you investing into?
That's right. Yeah. That was, and the other thing for me is time blocking is a new thing for me. So if I'm not organized the night before and I don't know what I'm doing the next day, I wake up very anxious. Mm-hmm. I have to know that I'm waking up with purpose. If I don't wake up with purpose, I wake up anxious. And that's something I had to learn about myself in therapy, because I was, you know, I would say I wake up every day and I'm anxious. What's happening? You know, so my therapist said, expose yourself to the feeling, find out why. So I did. And I put a calendar on my wall. So I literally wake up, I look at my calendar and go, okay, this is what I'm doing today. Great. Let's go.
Get the
momentum going, you know, spend some time with myself, you know, working out every day. Number one, if I don't work out in the morning, I'm a mess.
Yeah.
Got to get those neurotransmitters flowing. You know,
it's funny because you've been posting on Instagram that you take a morning walk every day.
Yes.
I feel like the days I don't go for my walk, I'm not myself.
Yes.
It's like, that's what, you know, I need also. So what would Sally today tell her younger self?
Ooh, I love that question. I do. I love that question. I mean, this is going to maybe sound kind of cheeky, but just to meet myself as soon as I can, so I'm not wasting time suffering in my traumas, you know, figure it out so that you're not suffering in the traumas. And believe in yourself. I mean, that's so cheesy, but like,
yeah.
Believe in yourself, you know, you're good. You got this. I don't know.
I love that.
Yeah. I'm teaching my girls that, you know, I feel like I broke the generational curses. Thank mm-hmm. God. Because my mom's mom, you know, was all the things that my mom was to me. And I didn't want to then take that to my girls.
You know,
so thank God, you know, that I didn't.
You just pinpointed something so important, because you know, when we meet ourselves, we break those generational curses, right? Like even recently, I've been in the space for a long time. And I don't know if you saw the post I posted just a few days ago of my son. And that's something that I went into my darkness, right? I figured out, okay, where's the anxiety? Because, you know, career wise, I'm good. I live by myself. Like what's the leftover anxiety? What is it? Where is it from? And for me, it was, I wasn't a conscious parent because I was a single mom, because I am a single mom, right? And I had to sit with that. But the minute I faced it and got to know that part, all of a sudden, it wasn't as heavy. So that's why it's so important for us not to run from that anxiety. In the past, I would get more angry if I'd feel anxious. Mm-hmm. And then one day I said, listen, anxiety, where are you coming from? Instead of participating in the pity party and the anxiety party, I stopped and I observed, and I went into the third person, which is interesting because I've been in the space for so long. You would think I would do it sooner,
yeah.
But yeah. For this, exactly. Reason, I couldn't put my finger on it. And I just, I asked myself, I said, okay, slow down. Who are you?
Yeah.
And it told me, it's like, you're angry because your child's growing up. You're a single mom. You're working so much. And when you look at him, he keeps getting taller. He keeps getting bigger. And now I have this thing with my son where I broke a generational curse, because my parents too, my dad was always working. My mom was partying. You know, she was, you know, she was sick of raising everyone. And she was like, you're the daughter I had at 36. And she was a great mom, but she wanted her time, which she was.
Yeah, same as mine. Yep, exactly. So,
I have this thing with my son now where if I say the word, I mean, if he says the word monkey, I have to put my phone away at that second, unless it's an emergency. I broke the generational curse, and that's his signal. Yeah. Mom, I need you now.
Yep. Yep. So. If we could put our kids, I'm reading a book right now, which I'm going to recommend to you, even though your son's not a teenager yet. It's called Raising Teenagers. It's on Audible. It's 1 hour. You can listen to the whole thing. I wish somebody would have recommended this book before my daughters were teenagers, because I think I would have probably not made as many mistakes as I did. I'm listening to it now. It's amazing. So I recommend that to any parent that's raising from 10 to 17. Please read this book. Don't wait another day. I'm not they don't pay me to say that. You know, it's just a great book. But I want to go back really quickly. Anxiety to me was always a bully, right? And if you don't stand up to the bullies, they'll keep bullying you. They'll keep pushing you around. And you can also look at anxiety as like that big wave in the ocean that you could either let it, you know, swoop you out, push you back, or you can dive into it, right? So we just have to remember that we are in control of what happens to our lives. We are in control of it, right? Our thought processes, how we choose to react to things, right? It's that thing that they say 10% is what happens, 90% is how you deal with what happens. So we really are in control of our destiny and what our life is. We really are. And why do we give everybody else control over it? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Why are you giving that person control? Why are you giving that person control, right? Why are you giving that substance control? Why are you giving that TV show control? So we really got to be so mindful about who we are, what we want, you know, what is our life? You got to be mindful of it. You have to, otherwise you're going to be pushed around by the waves in the ocean.
Yeah. And that's also, I love that you said that, because we can know ourselves physically and we see ourselves in the mirror every day, mm-hmm. but really getting to know ourselves is looking inside.
That's absolutely right. And we've never seen ourselves. We've only seen our reflection, yeah. right? So that's the other thing when you think about just going a little bit sideways, when you think about, I've never seen what everybody else sees, right? I've only seen my reflection. And I heard one person say one day, you know, there's three ways that you could be seen: the way you see yourself, the way other people see you, and the way God sees you. And if you focus just on one, you're really never going to know who you are. So if I focus just on what I think about myself, right, I'm going to miss out on a lot, because there's things that people see in you that you don't see in yourself. So, you know, my advice to any moms or people out there, teenagers, whoever, men, like, surround yourself around people that will tell you the truth, but also people that love you, because you could be around people that tell you the truth in their own perspective because they're trying to bring you down. So be very careful who you surround yourself with, right? Like, I learned that the hard way. So now I feel like I have a good group of beautiful women that love me unconditionally, no matter what I say, that I call my vault keepers. So find your one or two vault keepers that you can say anything to, and there's no judgment.
I love just that. I love that so much. So Sally, tell everyone, how can we find you on social media?
Yes. Okay. So my main thing is Instagram. So Sally Cologne, the number one. If you want to find me on Clubhouse, it's Sally Cologne. And then I just want to promote one quick thing that I'm doing with my friend Tim Story and my friend Peter O. Estevez. You know Peter, you know Tim, and Selena Belizon and my friend Joseph. So we put together this beautiful, it's a leadership conference for the Latin community. It's going to be beautiful. It's in Vegas, January 15, 2022. I'm producing the event with my friend Joseph and Tim and Peter and Selena. And register. And maybe you'll put it in here. I don't know how that works with your lower thirds.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, perfect. So it's excelenteevent.com. You can register now. Join us January 15th. If you're in the Latin community, really, if you're in any community, but we are trying to reach and teach the Latinos leadership and mindset and changing your mindset. And so I'm really excited about that event.
I love that so much. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
You're one of those people. We're like this. I got you.